te vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam naram Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tatho jaya mudirae nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 20, entitled Pure Devotional Service, Text 36. Please repeat after me. Namaye kanto bhaktanam guna dosho bhava guna sadhunam samachittanam buddhe param upeyusham namaye kanto bhaktanam guna doshobdh bhava guna sadhunam samachittanam buddhe param upeyusham namaye kanta bhaktanam guna doshobdh bhava guna sadhunam samachittanam buddhe param upeyusham namaye kanta bhaktanam nadosho bhava guna sadhunam samachittanam De paramupeshuna. Sadhunam samachittanam buddhe param upeyusham. Na, not. Mai, in me. Eka anta, unalloyed. Bhaktanam, of the devotees. Guna, recommended as good. Dosha, forbidden as unfavorable. Udbhava, arising from such things. Guna, piety and sin. Sadhunam, of those who are free from material hankering. Samachittanam, who maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Buddhe, that which can be conceived by material intelligence. Param, beyond. Upayusham, of those who have achieved. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: material piety and sin, which arise from the good and evil of this world, cannot exist within my unalloyed devotees, who, being free from material hankering, maintain steady spiritual consciousness in all circumstances. Indeed, such devotees have achieved me, the Supreme Lord, who am beyond anything that can be conceived by material intelligence. Purport: the words Buddhe Param indicate that the material modes of nature cannot be found within a pure devotee absorbed in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna clearly explains that a pure devotee is recognized by complete detachment from personal desire. Therefore, a pure devotee constantly engaged in selfless service to Lord Krishna may not always observe the innumerable details of Vedic rituals and regulations. Such occasional negligence is not to be considered a transgression. Similarly, observance of ordinary material piety does not constitute the ultimate qualification of a soul surrendered to God. Love of Krishna and absolute surrender to the Lord's will raise one immediately to the transcendental platform, where activities performed on the Lord's behalf are absolute, being an expression of God's will. Ordinary materialistic persons sometimes falsely claim this exalted status for their whimsical, immoral activities and cause a great disturbance in society. However, just as an ordinary person should not falsely claim the executive privileges of the personal assistance of a national leader, similarly, an ordinary conditioned soul may not foolishly claim that his immoral, whimsical, or speculative activities are sheltered by divine right, being the will of God. One must actually be a pure devotee of the Lord, empowered by the Lord Himself, and completely surrendered to the will of the Lord, before one may be accepted as transcendental to ordinary piety and sin. There are cases of highly elevated devotees who momentarily fell down from the saintly platform of devotional service. The Lord instructs in Bhagavad Gita 9.30, Apichetsu Duracharo Bhajate Mam Ananyabhak Sadar Sadur Eva Samantavya Samyag Vyavasito Hisaha. A momentary fall down by a sincere devotee of the Lord cannot change the Lord's feelings towards such a person. Even an ordinary father or mother quickly excuses a momentary transgression by their child. Just as children and parents enjoy mutual love, the Lord's surrendered servants enjoy a loving relationship with the Lord. An unpremeditated accidental fall down is quickly excused by the Lord, and all members of society must share in the Lord's own feelings, excusing such a sincere devotee. An advanced devotee should not be branded as materialistic or sinful because of accidental fall down. A devotee immediately returns to the platform of saintly service and begs the Lord's forgiveness. However, one who permanently remains in a fallen condition can no longer be accepted as a highly elevated devotee of the Lord. Text 37 is the last text of this chapter, so I'm instructed to complete that also. Translation, evam etan maya dishtan anuti stanti me patha kshemam vindanti mat stanam yad brahma paramam vidu. Translation: persons who seriously follow these methods of achieving me, which I have personally taught, attain freedom from illusion and upon reaching my personal abode, they perfectly understand the absolute truth. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada in the 11th canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Pure Devotional Service Surpasses Knowledge and Detachment. Om Ajnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shiva Sadigaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in the purport, there is a very important point that has been mentioned here, that Krishna explains that a pure devotee is recognized by complete detachment from personal desire. Therefore, a pure devotee constantly engaged in selfless service to Lord Krishna may not always observe the innumerable details of Vedic rituals and regulations. Such occasional negligence is not to be considered a transgression. And similarly, observance of ordinary material piety does not constitute the ultimate qualification of a soul surrendered to God. So, you know, in our normal life, day-to-day regular life, everywhere we find that along with the holy names of the Lord, and not just in one religion, every religion, each religion has their, everywhere there is names of God that's common, then the cultures, religion has its own culture, and they all have their own individual rituals. These rituals, it is a universal principle, wouldn't say principle, but it's a universal custom, tradition, that people follow rituals in everything. So, by itself, rituals are not good or bad. It's a motive with which we offer the rituals. Because Prabhupada once mentioned that rituals are like, he defined it as, he said it is like formula, which actually, by which one can dovetail our consciousness to the Supreme Consciousness. So ritual is a formula by which we can do that. So, the intent with which we do it is the most important thing, not what is offered. As it is said that Krishna is Bhavagrahi, he sees the intent, which means he doesn't see what you offer, he sees how you offer, and more than that, he sees what is the thought or the consciousness behind the what we offer. So therefore, if we are just attached to the rituals without understanding the significance or the importance behind the on the purpose behind the rituals, then that could actually lead to misunderstandings. It could also, in extreme cases, lead to envy, anger, you know, so many negative qualities, because by itself the ritual could be almost fanatical if there is no meaning or explanation behind it. It could also have the opposite effect also. And this is stated also not just in the Vedas, but also in the Bible, the Quran, all the major religions. They all say that the intent of the rituals are the most important. So in one sense, in the real sense, even not just the arti, but you know, the namaz or mass or any other religious activities, they are also rituals. Chanting of the holy name is a ritual. So many spiritual activities we do, reading scriptures is a ritual. But why only in spiritual life? You know, in material life also, there are so many rituals people follow. At the drop of a hat, there are festivals. People do not see the significance of the festival. It is primarily they will just follow a certain custom, certain ritual. We see in Diwali time, for instance, people are very keenly seeing, because they not only get a holiday, but also because that's an occasion when they can share their, they can buy new clothes and they have a good time. But the real purpose or the intent behind the festival is not really seen. So they'll follow the letter of the law, as they say, but not the spirit of the law, or the letter of the law of God, but not the spirit. Even graduation ceremonies, you know, we see very modern universities who otherwise are very critical of what they call so-called old tradition and things like that. But when it comes to graduation, they will all wear a gown, they'll have a, you know, particular kind of hat, probably to show that, you know, they are in an elite group or something. But they will still follow a certain ritual. I remember even watching TV is a ritual for many people. I remember when I was young, there was this one of the most famous cricketers of India, and I was fascinated because he had a habit of, it was well known that he would only, he had a complete ritual before he went to open the batting. So he would always first sit in a particular spot, then he would take the left pad first, then he would take the upper strap, then the lower strap, then the bottom strap, then he would put the left glove on his hand, then he'd pick everything. It was critical. I mean, he did it for the 20 years that he had batted for India and for his club. So everyone follows a certain ritual. There's this famous tennis player who, one of the greatest players considered. He also has a certain ritual. I mean, everyone has, but these are symptoms of it. And, this people comment on it, but it is embedded in them. You know, then he has 5 bottles of juices, water, whatever. Then everything has to be exactly aligned. It cannot be slightly off. All that is done. Then the rackets also have to be in a certain place. So people have these, whether it is for good luck, for superstition, for displeasing someone. Like we make in religion, people go to the temple, for instance, or people follow rituals, partly also because out of fear. They don't want to displease. They may say that my mother used to do this, my grandmother used to do this, my family does this. Why displease? I don't know why. I don't know this particular God. You know, if I don't do it, then maybe God will be angry with me. So let me just do it. Or it may be out of material needs. They may want some material benedictions are needed. Or out of tradition. So these are, it becomes a ceremony. But as Prabhupada said, that the formula really has to be only when it is dovetailed or linked to anything that we do should be linked to the consciousness. Otherwise, the Bhagavatam says that all activity we do is a shrama eva hi kevalam. That everything is a waste of time unless it is linked to, directly, indirectly linked to the, to pleasing the Lord. Prabhupada also said that what is the use of rituals and speaking high philosophy if it doesn't lead to good character. So ultimately it's the substance of the person, and if the rituals are a stepping stone towards going to the level of improving oneself, and for that if we follow it sincerely, then the improvements would come, the transformation of the heart would come. Without that, it has no meaning. So, you know, if we have a certain arrogance, and if it helps us to accept or at least understand that we are arrogant, and then we at least minimize it, and then we see the need to be humble, or if we have extreme anger or extreme pride, and then we try to reduce it, in doing so, or following the rituals, so therefore then chanting of the holy names or reading the scriptures, coming to temples has a meaning. So one can mistake from the outside, you know, the activity, and may come to conclusions falsely. It is really the intent in which one does this. And then it can really, getting inspired by others who are doing better than us. Now that is very difficult to accept unless we see that in the larger interest of service to the Lord. Otherwise, we become very competitive. Prabhupada also gave the example that the waste, he said that when he said Shava Evai Kevalam, that it is a waste of time. He said, he gave the example of if you offer the pure ghee to ashes. So we may do it with the right style. We may take the purest of ghee. We may clean the utensils. But then finally the oblations are put to ashes. It has no meaning. So similarly, here the intent, if it isn't to link to the Lord, then it would have no value. And because it is externally looking the same, people may feel that I should also follow it. But really speaking, it can have different results. The same activity can have different results. For instance, if someone is performing aarti to get some prestige, he may get prestige or she may get prestige, or doing for some material benedictions may get benedictions, that's all. If they do it consistently, they may get that, that's all. But someone may do it to awaken sincerely their inner dormant love of God, to bring their better character, to understand how they can be the servant of the servants. If that is the case, so externally it may look the same, but internal consciousness can make all the difference. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us that as far as we are concerned, means as if you are following the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagati shakame. So our purpose is that we should have no other desire. We only want to be the servant of the servant of the servant, birth after birth. So that way we please Krishna the most, and then get the blessings are bestowed on us. And without the mercy of the Lord, our progress is useless. So ultimately, to invoke the mercy, we are doing. So it is not that we do it only on a temporary basis. It's not like a game that we say that we don't speak it, but in our mind we feel that I will do this because I know that if I am following, then Krishna's mercy will come. But Krishna knows the depth of our internal thought. So if we are really having some other motive at the end of the, you know, if you peel off all the layers, the final motive is not clear, not clean, then Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. But if it is really to improve, and if we make mistakes, then Krishna will help us reciprocate and help us. So there are some very nice stories in the Bhagavatam which also indicate how you know, the real purpose is served. When Krishna was small in Vrindavan, and when in the Govardhan Leela, we see that Nanda Maharaj and all were, for decades, they were offering all the offerings and articles were going to Lord Indra because the rains were coming and so on. So Krishna just challenged his father and the elders and said that, why are we doing this? Why are we offering to Indra? So then they explained to him that we are Vaishyas, we are agriculturalists, and we need to please him because he's giving us, and we also offer our gratitude to him. So then Krishna convinced them, and then they eventually offered to all the articles to Govardhan. So the purpose of Krishna here was to show that we go to the root of the tree. That what Krishna shows in this, even as a little child, is that if you offer to the Lord, then everyone else is taken care of. Just like we water the root of a tree, then the branches, twigs, the trunk, everything, the leaves, everything gets taken care of. You don't have to simultaneously and individually go to try to water the each and every part. So, similarly, in the fifth canto, there were these ritualistic Brahmins who kidnapped Jad Bharat. And, Jad Bharat actually was a king Bharat, who was a great king, had gone to the Himalayas and he was meditating. And then somehow he got attached to a deer. So he got the body of a deer the next life. But because he was a special soul, he had an exemplary life throughout, but for his mistake at the end, even though in the body of the deer, he remembered everything in the past, he knew who he was, and because of that, the next life, he became Jad Bharat. That was what people called him. And he was so careful and conscious of not repeating the mistake, that he deliberately acted like a fool just so that people would not offer him anything valuable. If anything, they were criticizing him, cursing him, they were harassing him. But he deliberately accepted it. He never spoke anything. So once this some dacoits kidnapped him and took him to some priests who were offering human sacrifice for king, for goddess Kali. And he was considered ripe because he was a healthy-bodied person and so on. But because Kali, who is actually a great devotee, and she was highly offended that a human being is and such a great soul is offered, so she personally came out of the deity and with a sword in hand and chopped off the heads of all the priests and all the dacoits who were there. The only one surviving was Jad Bharat. They both paid obeisance to each other and then he walked off. So we see that these rituals have not only no value, but in fact they are dangerous and in fact they are negative. Similarly, in the 10th canto also, Krishna is herding his cows, Krishna and Balram. And once along with the cowherd boys, they feel hungry and then they ask their friends, the gopas, why don't you, nearby there are these Brahmins who are doing some yajna for getting some higher elevation to higher planets. So you go to them and but they will not probably, because you are too young, so they will not accept you. So you go on the name of Balram because you are Kshatriya. And if you want, you can also use my name. But tell them that we are hungry. So they went there. And then the Brahmins were so intent on performing the yajna that they just ignored these boys. They didn't even look at them. Now actually when we, if someone gets angry at us, we feel bad. And someone says something nice to us, we feel good. But if someone totally neglects us, that is actually, we feel completely miserable. So these boys were feeling extremely miserable because not so much for themselves, because they completely ignored even the request for Krishna and Balaram. So then they went back to Krishna and very downcast, empty-handed, because then we have failed in our effort. And Krishna then, of course, he just laughed and said, they explained that this is the nature of begging. If you beg for food, they were begging, and so he said, if you beg for food, then you sometimes get, sometimes don't get. But why don't you go to the Brahmins' wives? So then Krishna tells them, now go to their wives, who were actually in their houses, doing their household chores. So then these boys go to the wives, and again the same, they beg for, just mention that we have come here and Krishna and Balaram are nearby in the forest and they're hungry. So we beg for some food. Immediately they just erupted with joy. They just took the best food that they had, packed everything, carried it on their heads and said, come, where can we go? So in spite of the husbands or brothers who were not favorable, they were upset that yagya is going on, how can you just go like this? They just went. So they took a risk, they went to the forest, they just went to give to Krishna, and then Krishna told them to, they saw him walking there in, you know, with Balaram and all the boys, and then they went back. Krishna said, now you go back. So they were not at all attached to anything but to please Krishna. So whatever Krishna said, he was hungry, so they provided the food. He asked them to go back. Immediately they accepted whatever their feelings were. But the important part of this story is that, you know, they had never met Krishna. These Brahmins' wives have never met Krishna. It is not like the gopis. They had not met Krishna, they had never even, they had no interaction with him, not even seen him. But how did they come to know about Krishna? So when they were young, before their marriage and even after their marriage, whenever they would go to the market, and interact with the Brijvasis there, and the, you know, vegetable sellers, flower sellers, and they would glorify Krishna, talk about him, and give stories. And just by hearing, they were so attracted. The power of Shravanam, just even that they were, in, that became their major goal, that when we have an opportunity, we must see who this Krishna is. And they were meditating on a person they had never met. So the minute they got this opportunity, they just grabbed it and showed how nothing else is as important as the desire that you have and the courage that you show to execute it. So when they came back, actually then the Brahmins realized that, we are completely, they were very ashamed of themselves. And they realized the greatness of their wives. Because they were feeling that, you know, we are supposed to be Brahmins. We have taken initiation to Gayatri Mantra. We know the Vedas. People come to us and fall at our feet and take our advice, and we do so many things. We have so much knowledge, and our wives have done nothing. And you know, when the opportunity came, they took it, and we missed the opportunity. So actually, in their heart of hearts, they surrendered to their wives. So, Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that the most important thing here is the eagerness and enthusiasm. When we want to, in what activity we do, how we move with strong eagerness and strong enthusiasm, whatever we do, we take the responsibility wherever we are given. First of all, responsibility to ourselves is also there. Somebody may say, I'm alone, I'm retired. Or I'm not working. But first, the responsibility is two times. One is to ourselves, because we are, we have taken vows. We have to lead a certain lifestyle. We have to follow the etiquette. We have to see how our service attitude is there, our consciousness. So that is important. And simultaneously, the responsibility to others, because it's a preaching movement, and Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have directed us that we have to share it with others. So, in discharging responsibility, how we do it is very important. If we do it with just being the letter of the law, as they say, you know, just doing the minimum needful, or whether we are doing only selectively what we like, we do. When we are interested in something, when it pleases us, we also do very much. When it is something which is an austerity, because you know there's going to be perhaps some tensions, or it is there may be some confrontation with some others in that service, or in any way displeasing, and we try to avoid it, saying that others are there, they'll do it. So yes, some service is always, Krishna will see it, but as he reciprocates and all, he knows exactly how, what was our thought and what was our motive. So then Krishna also may reciprocate selectively. So we have to be accepting that. So Rupa Goswami explains about this principle of lobha, when we talk of eagerness, so greed for service, that if we are eager to please, then the Lord will reciprocate with that eagerness. And he says that is the difference between a hollow ritual. Not all rituals will be hollow, but it will be hollow if there is no meaning to it. If it is done, as he said, either for material purposes or if it is done for so-called spiritual purpose, but actually hidden motive is for ourselves. So the difference between a hollow ritual versus a service which is really full of eagerness to help, and where the self is not the issue, the devotion is most important. That's the splitting point is this, that how do we accept with eagerness? So, Radhanath Swami Maharaj also mentioned that to access this mercy of the Lord, the eagerness and enthusiasm is there. But even if you are reciting prayers, and there are so many great prayers right through Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti's prayers, Prabhupada spoke 1 week on it, or Gajendra's prayers when he was virtually on his deathbed, practically about to be killed by the crocodile. Prahlad Maharaj's prayers, even Prabhupada's prayers on the Jaladut. So, the intent and the... So, reciting the prayers, of course, is beneficial. But even more beneficial is if we try to understand the mood in which the prayers were spoken. So, therefore, that becomes even more critical for us to know that we may parrot the prayers, we may know it very well, and that is very much of a help. But at some point in time, if not in the beginning, gradually we have to meditate on that and try to understand how it was spoken, in what context, in what mood, and to try to understand to the extent that we can the mood in which the prayers were spoken. So, when we talk of Sanatana Dharma, Sanatana Dharma is not it's not a narrow principle of any one particular religious faith. Sanatana Dharma is a universal principle. And because dharma means that which is which cannot be separated from our own existence. Many examples are given that, you know, the dharma of water is liquidity. Water has to be liquid. It may be temporarily in the form of ice, for instance, artificially, but at the moment it is in the heat, it will again go back to its normal form. Or the dharma of chili is hot. The dharma of sugar is sweetness. You cannot, when you, sugar cannot but be sweet. Water cannot but be liquid. So the dharma of a living being, a soul, is service to the Lord. This is our actual dharma, but there are many coverings which, when we take this birth and come to the material atmosphere, we are completely covered by that. So the purpose of Krishna consciousness is to gradually help us to connect to Krishna in such a way that we understand the purpose while we are doing our services, but we really understand what our link is, who we originally are. We are not this body, we are the soul. And on the level of the soul, what is our responsibility and how we discharge it. So, if you understand that dharma, then at that level, there is no distinction between caste, color, education, gender, etc. Ultimately, everybody is, we are all female in that sense, we are all Prakriti, only Purusha is Krishna. So, in that context, you can see that if it is actually implemented, then Satya Yuga, it was fully implemented, in other yugas it was implemented in much more than here. You can get a glimpse of what can be Vaikuntha, because there is absence of any discrimination, any potential for discord. That would be an utopian dream. So while we are in Kali Yuga, we can create, first of all, we have responsibility for ourselves, as we said, So how we look at it and how we discharge our activities to the best that we can, make the minimum mistakes, and then the community that, the family we are in, the community we live in, if we try to apply those principles, then it helps in the larger purpose of Srila Prabhupada's movement. Because we can otherwise just wait and see that we can say, well, others are doing it, I'm very happy. Movement will go on, it has already caught fire, you know, it is Krishna's arrangement. Prabhupada is coming as an acharya from disciplic succession. So we as individuals do not count. But if we want to, whatever minimum role that we have in this life, to put it meaningfully, then we have an opportunity to link up. Otherwise, like others, we will also be washed away. So that movement is not dependent on us. It will go on. But whether we want to do something and get attached to it, in whatever way we can, in how we behave, how we are disciplined, how we follow the instructions, how we take enthusiastically, you know, how we accept setbacks, you know, there will always be challenges because our mind is not, you know, we are always discriminating. No? We are on that level. So we do see when we get attached and then we realize mentally. So from mentally, how do we accept that on our, as a realization from our heart, that though I've understood it, but I'm not acting it, or I'm acting it, but I'm not really following it in spirit. How do I do it? This struggle is all part of Krishna consciousness. So that unmotivated and uninterrupted ahetuki apratihata service is really what defines Krishna consciousness. That is the, and Prabhupada really emphasized very strongly. So then at one stroke we can see that it is not a matter of whether we are a Hindu or a Christian or a Muslim or a Jain or Parsi or external designations or whatever. Finally, the bottom line is only that how much we are trying to develop the qualities to become useful to as a servant to the Lord, you know, humility, self-control, discipline, etc. Radhanath Maharaj gave a very nice example. He was referring to the Brahmins because they were repenting how that they missed the opportunity. At that time, he made a comment that it's like, you know, if you're working somewhere, you go for a paycheck, you know, salary. So the boss comes and tells you that, okay, I'm giving you your pay. But you said, no, I'm too busy. You know, I'm working, I don't want the paycheck. But actually, you're working for that. So the Brahmin's realization, what was that? We are actually doing all these rituals for the purpose of being with Krishna. But when Krishna comes here and gives us an opportunity, we are so busy doing the rituals that we forgot Him only. So, you know, it is like missing the wood for the trees. So we miss the essence. There's also the example of Shuklamba Brahmachari, that is in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, where a very poor Brahmin who was extremely, you can say, very poor, so he was always, you know, begging, going door to door, and he had a cloth bag and, you know, people would give the very low quality rice. He would accept whatever was given. Only Krishna knew that he was a pure devotee, what his intent was. Externally, he looked like a very, you know, just a beggar. So people were practically ignoring him. And even other devotees also didn't really understand his who he was. It was only when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he manifested his opulences, and then he called him, and then he put his hand in his bag and took that the low grade of rice and he ate it. And Shuklamba Brahmachari was completely shocked. But you know, then he was very upset also that the Lord, this is very low quality, not for you. We cannot. But he said, no, this is the sweetest rice I've ever had in my existence. So, again he was demonstrating, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the intent, his intent as a pure devotee, whatever he was getting, he was always meditating on Krishna, thinking of Krishna, and he was quite calm and composed in his material existence, whatever difficulties he had. So this is recognized by Krishna, so therefore, and there was no ritual followed. He had not had a bath, he had not clean the utensils and cook some nice rice, and even while offering no mantras, nothing, he had not even offered. Krishna just took it directly. So we should follow the rituals, but if we have the meaning. Here, Krishna is going to the extreme to say that Even if in such a case when it was spontaneous, but Krishna emphasized that the importance is really the internal thought that he had. Also, in the Mahabharata, in the Hastinapur, when Krishna went to Hastinapur as a peace messenger, Duryodhan had a big royal feast for him and he had a big reception for him. But Krishna chose to go to Vidur's place unannounced. Vidur was not even expecting him. He had nothing to offer, so he just gave him some banana peels. But Krishna was so ecstatic to have that. So it is not the what was offered. Like many years ago, very big business tycoon who is now the country is after him. I remember reading maybe 15 years ago, he was offering some 5 crores worth of diamond studded sword in Tirupati. It had come in the papers, big news. So, externally, now there may be sincere people who may be offering just some fruit, they don't have money. So Krishna will see what is in the heart of the person. That is the person really acknowledging my presence as the most important thing in his life and thus offering? Or is it something where you are using Krishna as a stepping stone? Krishna, that okay, I please him, I am expecting something. It's like again a business deal. So he understands everything. So we cannot try to fool him. So in the beginning of Vaidhi Bhakti, we do follow the rules, regulations, and rituals, etc., as we are told. We have to be careful that we follow them, understand the meaning, and once we understand the meaning and then follow, then it becomes, it's not mechanical. Otherwise, like even chanting, if we are following a japa, we're just closing the rounds, but not really. Prabhupada said we should actually chant with that desperation of as a child has for the mother. Every activity we do is have you to question our motive and understand what is it that we are seeking and how, with what enthusiasm and eagerness we are doing. So I'd just like to end by Radhanath Maharaj quoting his own personal example. When he was very young, when he was staying in the USA, so he said that once that he was very put off by many of the rituals he saw around him. People would just dress up and go on a particular day only, on a Sunday, and then they offer something. And he felt that it is completely external, there is no value to it, it's outdated. This was his words. Unfashionable, it was empty, backward and empty in his opinion. Because he didn't see any transformation, any change. It was just like someone externally changing, doing some things, come back and then you go back. So it was part of an activity that went on, all externally. Just like you go to the office, you eat your lunch, etc. It's all external. That's what he felt. Then he came to India, and then when he saw people performing aarti, so he was very uncomfortable. He said that this I will never do. This is too much, because again it is all just external, and I'd rather meditate, and I will, even when he met Prabhupada at the cross Maidan, the deities were devotees were offering the deities, Radha Krishna deities, on the stage, aarti and incense and all that. He's saying, what is this? Why are they doing it? So I will pray and meditate, but I am not going to do this. But 2 years later, he became the chief pujari of Radha Vrindavan Nath, and then he was offering making six offerings and six aartis a day for 7 years. And then he really started loving it. He really loved it. And he was explaining that the difference was that he understood, when he understood the meaning and why he was doing what he was doing, that changed his whole approach completely. So, it's a very science-based approach. It is not a whimsical approach and has a deep, deep philosophical connection. How one can awaken love for God and how one can please the Lord. So, there is not only a science, there is also a deep philosophy within, but it is also that one actually follows it, one can experience it. So when he saw that, that made all the change. So therefore we should question that when we come to the temple here, what are we achieving, or what are we thinking of, what do we want at the end of the day. Many times we may not think deeply, and we may think that we are doing it. I don't have any wrong motives, but we need to examine and say that really, really, what is it that I'm trying to please? I have to do it because it is good luck, or now I've got so many friends in the temple, and they'll feel bad if I don't come, or I will be people will question. So, in other words, I have to do it for somebody else. I mean, is that really a purpose, or is it that just I heard that today is a beautiful festival, nice prasad is there, new dress is there, let me go and see. Is that the reason? So, is the reason really, that could also be a reason. That is not that, when we hear, we get more excited. We are humans, that's fine. But primarily, that can't be the driving force. So, that helps us to question that, we do perform rituals. The rituals are essential and effective. They're a stepping stone, but as Prabhupada said, that it's a formula for dovetailing our consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. So, if we, this thing, if we were to check about everything we do, because chanting mantras is also ritual. So, we may, when we talk of rituals, we may think that just performing aarti is a ritual. No, we take the beads also a ritual, or for that matter, reading the scriptures, associating with devotees. If we are associating only as a, to get friendship, to just relax with people we are more comfortable with because we don't like the external environment. Or is it something that we can contribute to? It may help my service, or I can help someone, or, you know, and you're always looking for to help people. So, in every aspect, this is what we, an opportunity for us to examine our own existence, because by being present here, clearly we have some desire to be serious and sincere. So I'll end here. Hare Krishna. If there's any question, then we have maybe time for one or two. मिलियोंगे पहले मुझे
अजामिल प्रभु भक्तिपाद जी का शिष्य है.
किसका शिष्य?
भक्तिपाद.
अच्छा,
जगन्नाथ प्रभु, सत्वत प्रभु, मैं, भक्तिपाद, ये पांडु प्रभु, सब यहीं पे पहले स्टार्ट किया था ना.
आपको कोई प्रश्न था?
हाँ, मेरा प्रश्न है, चंचल ही मन कृष्ण, ये जो चंचल मन जो है, इसको कैसे मैं काबू में कर सकता हूँ?
तो वही अपना कृष्णा कॉन्शियसनेस में बताया है कि हमें जो प्रोसेस दिया है वैदिक भक्ति में, चंचल मन सबका है, लेकिन उसके लिए हमें कोई जेन्युइन साधु के पास जाना है, उनके साथ उनकी शरणागति लेनी है. हमने अपना मंत्र बताया, मंत्र कैसे करना, दूसरों का संग लेना, वो प्रोसेस सबको दिया है, वही सबके लिए एक ही प्रोसेस है, और वो प्रोसेस तो कायम रहेगी पूरी लाइफ. ठीक है, एनी अदर क्वेश्चंस? श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय. श्री प्रभुपाद की जय.